from Lake Wissota, once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Along with Mark Jacob, former editor at the Chicago Tribune, Chicago Sun-Times, and now do we put media critic on your business card yet? What are we?
Just an unofficial media critic. But having been in the media for four decades, I certainly can spot bad stuff when I see it because, you know, I was responsible for bad stuff.
No doubt about that. So you're not quite at the point of like Brian Stelter you're not going to have a Sunday morning show on CNN about the media here.
Twitter's about the best I can do, and that's Mark Jacob 16.
There you go. As we talk about recent events and how the media has covered them, most recently, of course, we have the primary in Wisconsin, but we also had primaries last week in Arizona and Michigan. You had Trump and Pence each endorsing different candidates in races in those states, along with Georgia. And look, we know there's an entire conservative media ecosystem. Well, there will always be the right wing. So I'm not going to pretend that that's not going to happen. I'm talking more about your mainstream or legacy media. And as they have been covering both the primaries and other recent events, who's frustrating you most lately with seemingly a slow learning curve on how you cover these things?
Well, everyone really, Pat. It's like, for example, I think it was the Washington Post had a headline that said, the Justice Department said it was going to be, above politics. Then the Trump search warrant was issued or something like that, which suggesting that the very fact that they went to a judge, as they're supposed to, got the search warrant, conducted the search, that was somehow politicizing things. And a lot of these problems like this happen just with kind of someone trying to be loose and clever in a headline on the web or something. I mean, the real scary thing is that some people, when I post about the media, they say, oh, it's all a big conspiracy. They're all just trying to, plotting to get money. You know, having been in the media for a long time, the media is not capable of widespread conspiracies because it's not organized enough and it's not competent enough to engage in a really successful conspiracy. So instead, in my opinion, what it is a lot of people individually just following the pack and doing the same things they've always done. And that whole kind of both sides journalism as a way to inoculate journalists from being accused of being biased. You know, just put it out, what everyone says, just report it and then you're safe. That whole thing has been around for a very long time. And the real problem is not that journalists just started doing it now, it's that they don't stop doing it based on these kind of circumstances. So that's, that kind of stuff. And also CNN just bringing on the same old liars. I mean, Kellyanne Conway, really? She's not a government official anymore, so there's really no news value in it. She's on one of your shows to flog her book. And I mean, is there anyone who's more demonstrated that they're a professional liar than Kellyanne Conway? I mean, come on, she's just a liar. So why? So when you bring her in, who are you serving? Are you serving the viewers? No, of course you're not. You're like letting somebody lie to them. You're serving the two-party system. I don't know what you're serving your own ability to fill airtime and and create controversy. And posing as unbiased, I think those are the only things you're serving. But you're sure not serving the reader or the viewer.
And it's not as if they're not hearing the criticism out there or the critiquing, not just from you, certainly not just from me on my much smaller stage. But I think of Soledad O'Brien is especially good at calling out this kind of behavior. Oliver Darcy, does as well, and some others. So again, it's not like they're not clueless about the impact of their decisions on booking, quote unquote, experts and commentators on this.
Well, the part of the problem with DC media, and a lot of this problem is a Washington media problem, is that they're part of the power structure. It's not this idea. I always felt like when I was at the Tribune, as Metro editor, if we published a story that made people mad, that was good, because the best sign that you're doing a bad job is when nobody complains about you in news media. If you're being honest, because the people on both sides of an issue, or they don't want you to be fair. They want you to be on their side. And so if you're fair and objective and you're fact oriented, sometimes that makes them mad and they don't like it. So I think that in Washington, there's too much of, we're going to see this person at this dinner, at this cocktail party, so we're not going to make anyone mad. And so it's to a large extent, I think the problem is that the news media in Washington is too embedded in the whole system, and it's not, and not able to, or not willing to be adversarial the way that really strong watchdog media are.
So let's name some names. I think especially in terms of who do people like the people I've named already, who do they call out? I certainly have a couple that I really am not fond of that I'll mention in a minute, but I think by and large, the number one name that comes up on this list is Maggie Haberman from the New York Times, and which again, I don't pay nearly as much attention perhaps as I should, but what it seems to be is that case of the consummate insider who again wants to not burn sources, but you know, in the meantime, treats some of them with kid gloves or even withholds information because, you know, I might have to write a book someday about it. Is there anybody that gets probably called out more often in terms of mainstream journalism?
No, she does, because she's so tied in with the Trumps and they talk to her. And, you know, I think some of it's fair, some of it's unfair. I mean, if you're going to have that beat, you're going to have to be talking to the Trumps. You are. Where she gets in trouble as far as the truth and serving her readers is when she will tweet just a straight out statement by Eric Trump, for example, that's just a, you know, three sentences worth of lies and just lies. I mean, I'm not talking about bad opinions. I'm talking about factual lies. And she'll just tweet that out with no comment or anything. And so she's using her gigantic platform to amplify lies. And and I think that, and there are ways to cast things, you know, if you're covering the President of the United States or the Senate minority leader, you sometimes do have to report what they say, even if they're lying. But you can cast it right, said without evidence, or although the facts indicate otherwise, Mitch McConnell said X. I mean, you can put it in a frame that makes it clear what the truth is. But this is, you know, the listeners might have heard this term, but if they haven't, very common in the industry is what we call stenography instead of journalism, which is, that's when you're not analyzing anything. You're not going and finding out any independent facts. All you're doing is standing there listening to people talk and writing down what they say and putting that in your story. You're just a stenographer.
That's something that we talked about on Tuesday with Professor Mike Wagner from the University of Wisconsin, is that it doesn't just happen at the small level. At the small market level, there were many times where I had to basically be the fifth year of journalism school for some of these new reporters to get them to not engage in stenography and to actually, you know, ask questions or just pick up the phone and get that bit of follow-up. Right. So when you see that kind of stenography happening at the national level, it's especially troublesome. But again, they can also make, you know, just straight up mistakes or you know, I mentioned a minute ago, you know, Brian Stelter, you know, being a bit of a media critic. And yet this week, he too put something up that people second guessed, where he tweeted, "More than 36 hours have passed since the FBI showed up at Mar-a-Lago. Officials have not explained why, even though they have a very good reason for staying silent." Well, yeah, you stay silent. You don't talk about the search warrant that you executed. It's not on them to explain. It's something that Trump was the one that told everybody that this was happening.
And Trump had all that material and could release it at any time. And really, the thing about it is, if Merrick Garland had come out and said, "We searched Mar-a-Lago," and made a big deal about it, that would have been politicizing the issue. And he would have come under incredible criticism. So what he's doing, and sometimes it frustrates people like me who are utterly convinced that Trump is a career criminal and someday needs to be brought to justice. Mm-hmm. People like us have been very frustrated with Merrick Garland because he's doing everything the same way he's all that Justice Department always does things. And we that in which we're not sure how it's going to end, because, you know, frankly, they could have done charges right based on the Mueller report, and they didn't. And you know, I mean, that was obstruction of justice demonstrated. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so what I'm saying is that they operate quietly. They operate the way they do. And that's don't you really want this Trump thing to be treated just the way any other criminal case would be treated? I do. I really do. I want it to not look political. I don't want it to be political, except in the idea of saving our democracy. That kind of politics is fine with me.
And that's where, as I was looking to see, I knew I was forgetting somebody else's name in terms of keeping the press honest. And Jay Rosen is another one. And yeah. He took note of how we referenced that Washington Post headline earlier. The headline reads, "Garland vowed to depoliticize justice. Then the FBI searched Mar-a-Lago." And right. It was Jay Rosen who noted that the Post had to go back. They changed the headline to "FBI's search of Mar-a-Lago lands Merrick Garland in a political firestorm." So they take less of the political motive off of Garland, but not right. entirely so. There are a couple of others that I want to name just out of frustration. And for me, the two, and these are the poster children for but her emails, are Chris Saliza of The Washington Post and Andrea Mitchell from NBC News. Both have moments where they are extremely capable reporters, but I just could not figure out what it was in 2016 with the emails, with those two especially. It's, you know, whatever it was, I just found myself looking at the TV and saying, "You will just not let this go when it is so out of proportion."
Right, right. But it was in proportion to their goal to look so objective that they could find that they could make it. So, you know, Trump like grabbing some woman's private parts and bragging about it, equal to Hillary, you know, not following 100% the procedures on documents. Interestingly, what Hillary did with the emails is something that almost every member of the Trump White House did when they got in. You know, they found Ivanka doing this exact same thing, even worse. And, you know, so it's like, so it was just a BS issue. But the emails thing served for the news media as a vehicle for them to be able to say something bad about Hillary so they looked objective. And that's the whole thing about this idea that we have to look objective. How about looking accurate? How about looking truthful? How about looking factual? Those are the things that should happen. The other thing I want to mention about DC is that there's a big problem with access journalism. There's a huge problem where they have to, where, you know, ABC wants to get like an exclusive kind of walkthrough of the White House with Trump. And so they, you know, curry favor with them. They want to get that over CBS. And so when they get that big walkthrough interview, like they did early on in the Trump administration, they pull their punches and they're not hard hitting. Because they want to be asked back. And that's the thing. I mean, in Chicago, we, in an unaired part of the ABC interview the week after Trump took office, Trump lied about violence in Chicago, just flat out lied. And they wouldn't give us the video. We saw it on a transcript. They wouldn't give it to us, and they didn't ever report it. ABC didn't. And I'm convinced that was access journalism. They wanted to be invited back, so they didn't want to make Trump mad.
And the last note I want to say about stenography, and yes, this is most egregious on Twitter, but you see it in mainstream, like TV coverage as well, is they don't consider it stenography when they say, well, we're just showing you what they said and then you can decide on it. And like here's a Maggie Haberman tweet where it just says, "Eric Trump to Fox, give me a break. Joe Biden signed off on this, but then there's nothing that follows up that says, but this is not true. Right. And yeah, Twitter only has so many characters, but you have endless time in a 24/7 news cycle to be thorough and factual about what you're saying. Mark Jacob, do you want to stick around for one more little segment here?
Happy
okay,
to.
Let's do that. We'll take a break and then we'll wrap up this hour after this. You're up north.